Welcome back, everybody, to another deep dive. This time, we're going to unpack a case that I think you'll find really interesting. It's Boyd v. Lincoln Electric, a 2008 decision out of the Ohio 8th District Court of Appeals. And, you know, on the surface, it might seem pretty straightforward. It basically boils down to this question. Can you be harmed by a warning if you never saw it?
Yeah, that's a pretty intriguing question, isn't it? But as we dig into the details, I think you'll see that this case gets at some really core issues in product liability law. Like, what does it really mean to give an adequate warning? And how far does a manufacturer have to go to make sure that those warnings are communicated effectively?
Totally. All right, so let's give everyone a little bit of background on the case first. Boyd revolves around Joseph Boyd, who was a boilermaker welder. He had been on the job for 27 years, exposed to welding fumes pretty much every day. And in 2004, he was diagnosed with something called manganism.
Manganism is a neurological condition, kind of similar to Parkinson's disease, and it's directly caused by inhaling those manganese fumes that are produced during welding.
Okay, so far so good. But here's where things get a little bit complicated. The manufacturers of those welding rods that Boyd was using, they had actually put warnings on their product containers going as far back as 1967. And they had even updated those warnings over the years.
Right, but here's the thing. Boyd testified that he never actually saw any of those warnings.
How is that even possible? You'd think with something like welding, safety warnings would be, you know, pretty hard to miss.
Well, as it turned out, it was actually pretty common practice in the welding industry for those welding rods to be taken out of their original containers before they ever made it to the welders themselves.
Oh, wow. So that makes a lot more sense. It's like, I don't know, buying a power tool or something where all the safety instructions are buried inside the box, the box that you immediately throw away. Would you even know those warnings were there? Could the manufacturer really say they did their part to warn you about the dangers?
Yeah. It's a really tricky situation, for sure. And it forces us to grapple with this question. Is it enough for a manufacturer to just provide a warning? Or do they have a bigger responsibility to make sure that those warnings are actually seen and understood by the folks who are using their products?
Right. So the manufacturers did have warnings, but Boyd never saw them. So what happened next? What happened when all of this went to court?
Well, at the trial level, the court actually sided with the manufacturers. They granted them what's called a summary judgment, which basically means they dismissed the case before it even went to trial.
Seriously? So is that cut and dry?
Well, their reasoning was that since Boyd hadn't actually seen those warnings, he couldn't prove that they were the reason he got sick. Seemed pretty logical at the time, I guess.
Okay. But I have a feeling this isn't where the story ends. What happened next?
You're right. There's more to it. So Boyd decided to appeal that decision. And when the case got to the Ohio 8th District Court of Appeals, that's where things took a really interesting turn. The appeals court decided to reverse the decision on those failure to warn claims. They basically said it wasn't enough for the manufacturers to just show that warnings existed. They had to prove that the warnings were adequate.
Adequate. So what does that actually mean in a legal sense?
It gets at those deeper questions we were talking about earlier, like, were the warnings clear enough? Were they placed in a spot where somebody would realistically see them and pay attention to them? The appeals court was basically saying, hey, it's not just about whether a warning existed. It's about whether it was a good warning.
I see what you mean. It's like those terms and conditions agreements online that nobody actually reads. Is it really a warning if it's basically invisible?
Exactly. And this is where we start to get into one of the really key legal issues at play in this case. Proximate cause.
Ah, yes, proximate cause. Now, for any law students who might be listening, I'm sure this is familiar territory, but for anybody who needs a refresher.
Proximate cause basically means you have to prove that there's a direct link between what the defendant did or didn't do and the harm that the plaintiff suffered. In this case, the manufacturers were arguing that since Boyd hadn't seen the warnings, there was no way to prove that their warnings or their lack of warnings were what caused his manganism.
But the appeals court didn't really agree with that argument, did they?
Nope, they didn't. And here's where things get a little bit specific to Ohio law. Ohio law actually has this thing called a presumption of heeding warnings.
Hold on. So even if someone didn't see a warning, the law basically assumes they would have followed it if it had been clear and visible. That seems kind of wild.
It's a pretty interesting legal concept for sure. And that presumption is exactly why the appeals court decided to send this case back down for further proceedings. They said a jury needed to decide whether those warnings were actually adequate. And, you know, if they were adequate, whether Boyd would have acted differently if he had seen them.
So even though Boyd himself didn't see those warnings, the court was saying he still had a case. It was possible that the warnings themselves were the problem. Maybe they were hidden or confusing or just not good enough.
Right. It's not enough to just have a warning. It has to be a good warning. And that brings us to another layer of complexity in this case, something called the learned intermediary doctrine.
Okay, that sounds complicated. Can you break that down for us a bit?
Sure. So the learned intermediary doctrine basically says that sometimes a manufacturer can rely on a middleman, like an employer or a doctor, to pass on important safety information to the person who's actually using the product. Think about prescription drugs. The drug company gives the warnings to the doctor, and then the doctor explains those warnings to their patient.
Got it. So in Boyd's case, were the welding rod manufacturers basically trying to say that they relied on the employers to tell their welders about the risks?
Exactly. But there was a bit of a problem with that argument. Remember how we were talking about the adequacy of those warnings? Well, the court said that the adequacy of the warnings that were given to those intermediaries, the employers, was also something that needed to be figured out. So they couldn't say for sure whether the learned intermediary doctrine actually applied in this case.
So it all comes back to those warnings, doesn't it? It doesn't matter if it's going straight to the person using the product or if it's going through someone else. That warning has to be clear, accessible, and understandable for everyone involved.
Absolutely. Boyd v. Lincoln Electric really underscores the point that a manufacturer can't just slap a warning label on something and consider it done. They've got a responsibility to make sure that those warnings are communicated effectively to the people who are ultimately using their products.
Right. All right, so I think we've laid out the legal groundwork here. But what does all this actually mean for you, the listener? What are the real-world implications of Boyd v. Lincoln Electric? We'll explore that and a lot more right after this. And we're back. Okay, so we've talked about the legal ins and outs of Boyd v. Lincoln Electric, but now I want to get practical. I mean, this case, it has some pretty big implications for product liability law, right?
Oh, absolutely. I think the biggest takeaway for manufacturers is this. You can't just slap a warning label on a product and call it a day. You really have to think carefully about where that warning is placed, how it's worded, and whether it's actually going to reach the people who are using your products.
So it's not just about warning. It's about warning effectively. But what does that actually look like in the real world?
Well, you have to consider the context, right? So in Boyd's case, those warnings, they were on the containers that the welders almost never even saw. Maybe the warning should have been like right on the welding rods themselves or displayed somewhere super obvious in the work environment. The point is, manufacturers have got to be proactive and creative when it comes to making sure that those warnings can't be missed.
Yeah, that makes sense. You got to anticipate how people are actually using your product and, you know, make sure those warnings are front and center.
Exactly. And it's not just about placement either. It's also about the language of the warning itself. Legal jargon and technical terms, forget about it. Warnings need to be written in plain language that anyone can understand, clearly laying out those potential risks.
Okay, so manufacturers out there, take note. Clear, concise, and impossible to miss. Those are the key ingredients for an effective warning. But let's flip the script for a second and talk about what Boyd v. Lincoln Electric means for the consumer, you know,
yeah.
Especially for folks who have been injured by a product. What are those people out there who are thinking, wait a minute, I was hurt, but I never even saw a warning label. Like, what does this case have to say to them?
Well, this case, I think it offers a glimmer of hope to those folks. Because what Boyd v. Lincoln Electric shows is that even if you didn't see a warning yourself, you might still have a valid legal claim. If the warnings were inadequate, like hidden or unclear or just plain incomplete, you can argue that the manufacturer didn't really fulfill that duty to warn.
So it's almost like this case shifts the burden of proof a little bit. It's not just on the injured person to prove they read and understood a warning. It's also on the manufacturer to prove that they took reasonable steps to actually communicate those risks.
That's exactly right. And going back to that presumption of heeding warnings we talked about earlier, that can be a really powerful tool for someone who's been injured. Because remember, the court basically presumes that if a warning had been clear and obvious, the person would have followed it.
Okay, that's really important information for anyone who's been hurt by a product.
Right.
Right? Don't just assume that you don't have a case just because you didn't see a warning label. Talk to a lawyer. See if maybe those warnings themselves were flawed. But what about the learned intermediary doctrine? How does that play into all of this?
Yeah, so the learned intermediary doctrine, it can be a little bit tricky. As we discussed, it basically allows manufacturers to rely on intermediaries like doctors or employers to pass warnings on to the end user. But Boyd v. Lincoln Electric clarifies that this doctrine, It isn't a free pass.
So they can't just say, oh, hey, we warned the employer. It's their fault that the employee didn't get the message.
Right. The court was really clear about that. They emphasized that the learned intermediary doctrine only applies if the warnings given to that intermediary, you know, the employer in this case, were adequate themselves. So if the warnings given to the employer were unclear or incomplete or whatever, the manufacturer can't just hide behind this doctrine.
So it all comes back to those warnings again, doesn't it? Whether they go straight to the consumer or they go through someone else, they've got to be adequate.
You got it. Boyd v. Lincoln Electric is a powerful reminder that warnings are only effective if they're designed and communicated well, and that means at every level.
Okay, so before we move on, let's just do a quick recap of those key takeaways for our listeners, especially for folks who might find themselves in a similar situation.
For sure. So for the manufacturers out there, the message is clear. Don't be stingy with your warnings. Invest the time and resources to make sure that they are clear, easy to see, and tailored to how people are actually going to use your product. Remember, a badly designed warning is practically the same as having no warning at all.
And for consumers, if you've been injured by a product, don't just assume you don't have a case just because you didn't see a warning label. Talk to a lawyer. You know, it's possible that those warnings were inadequate, and that might be grounds for a legal claim. Boyd v. Lincoln Electric shows that the law recognizes how important it is for those warnings to be done right, and for manufacturers to be held accountable for communicating those risks effectively.
This case is a good reminder that product liability law is always evolving. It's not enough to just slap a label on something and hope for the best. Manufacturers have a responsibility to really go the extra mile to protect consumers, and consumers have a right to expect clear, accessible, and understandable warnings.
Well said. And you know, we've covered a lot of ground today with Boyd v. Lincoln Electric. We've talked about failure to warn, proximate cause, the learned intermediary doctrine. It's amazing how one legal case can spark so many thought-provoking questions, isn't it?
It really is. It's what makes law so fascinating. It's always evolving and adapting to all the complexities of our world.
And, you know, you mentioned broader implications earlier. Can you kind of expand on that a little bit? I'm sure our listeners are curious to hear more about what you meant.
You're right. What's really interesting about Boyd v. Lincoln Electric is that it raises questions that go beyond just product liability. It makes you think about the concept of informed consent and how that plays out in all different areas of our lives.
And we're back. You know, my head is still spinning a little bit after that last segment. I mean, it's kind of crazy to think that all these legal concepts we've been talking about, you know, adequate warnings, proximate cause, even that learned intermediary doctrine could actually have implications beyond just product liability law.
Yeah.
It's like, whoa, where does it end?
I know, right? It really makes you wonder how many other situations are out there where those same principles could apply. Like, if you really boil this case down to its essence, it's about whether someone was truly informed about the risks they were facing. And that idea, well, that could be relevant in all sorts of contexts.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, you mentioned those medical consent forms earlier, and that one really stuck with me. Like, how many times have we all just kind of blindly signed those things without actually understanding every single word? Can we really call those informed decisions if the information isn't presented in a way that's clear and easy to understand?
You're hitting on a really key point there. I mean, sometimes it almost feels like those forms are intentionally designed to be confusing, you know, packed with all this technical jargon that most people wouldn't be able to make heads or tails of. So if someone ends up getting hurt because they weren't truly informed about the risks of a medical procedure, could they actually argue that the consent they gave wasn't actually informed consent?
Whoa, that's a really interesting legal question. And it's not just limited to medical consent forms either, right? I mean, think about all those financial contracts we have to sign. Those things can be incredibly dense and complicated, full of all this tiny little fine print that nobody even reads.
Exactly. So let's say someone invests in a risky financial product and ends up losing a bunch of money. Could they make the argument that they weren't adequately warned about the potential downsides? Could they say, hey, the information wasn't presented clearly enough, or I never even saw those warnings because they were buried in 100 pages of legal mumbo jumbo?
These are some seriously big questions. It really makes you realize that this whole idea of adequate warning, you know, making sure that people are truly informed about the risks they're taking, could have implications that reach far beyond what we might initially think.
You got it. And that's what's so fascinating about a case like Boyd v. Lincoln Electric. It doesn't just settle a specific legal dispute. It starts a bigger conversation about responsibility, transparency, and informed consent. It forces us to think critically about how information is communicated and whether people are really equipped to make good decisions when the information they're given is incomplete or hidden or just plain confusing.
You know, as we wrap up our deep dive today, it feels like we've only just begun to explore this really complex and ever-evolving area of the law. But what I find so exciting is that these concepts we've been talking about, they're not just legal principles. They're relevant to all of us in our everyday lives, in the choices we make, in the interactions we have with each other.
Absolutely. Boyd v. Lincoln Electric serves as a powerful reminder that we all have a responsibility to make sure that information is communicated clearly and effectively. Whether we're manufacturers who are designing warning labels, doctors who are explaining medical procedures, or financial advisors who are helping clients make investment decisions, we need to prioritize transparency and make absolutely sure that the people we're dealing with are truly informed.
Couldn't have said it better myself. And to all of you listening out there, we hope this deep dive has given you a fresh perspective on the complexities of product liability law, and maybe even sparked some thought-provoking questions about informed consent and the responsibility we all share to communicate in a way that's clear and easy to understand. Until next time, keep those questions coming, keep digging deeper, and keep those legal minds sharp.